Welcome to the Talking Auckland podcast series. In this podcast, I'm going to continue to build on the earlier podcast I did in the week, where I looked at New Zealand urban development and good old SimCity 4. That stemmed on from the fact that with Roger Sutton now gone, or in the progress of going from Sierra, how people rated his performance and it led on to the inevitable conclusion, well, one conclusion, that our planners are trained in SimCity 4, where I actually utterly refuted that. Planners in the United States are trained in SimCity 4 and possibly the new SimCity 2013, and SimCity 4 was at the time, not sure now, part of the American school curriculum at elementary and high school level. Here in New Zealand, it's you go through a lot of theory that leads us into the mess we've got today. So you can see why I would never was a fan of the planning school, left halfway through, and when I do return to university to do postgraduate, it will be rather than finishing my planning, Masters of Planning Practice, or its successor paper, degree course now, be back into a Master of Arts in Geography, seeing my original degree is a Bachelor of Arts in Geography, specifically Human Geography and Political Studies. And so in that earlier podcast, I was working through if more of our lot had SimCity 4 training, although there are some shortfalls of SimCity 4, such as the obliteration and the bulldoze busting, without having to worry about the old NIMBYs, it is still quite a useful tool, especially the zoning tools and how they work and how they should be working in Auckland. But in this podcast, I'm going to be drawing those analogies on into a new council-controlled organisation, or CCO for short, as it's commonly known as, that is due to kick off July next year. This new CCO, as I discovered when I gave my presentation earlier this month to the Auckland Development Committee on alternative funding for transport projects, and was so announced by the Deputy Mayor and Chair of the Auckland Development the Auckland Development Committee, Penny Hulse, is that this new CCO merges both Waterfront Auckland, so which has been rather successful, although it does attract the ire of the wider Auckland city or region on the money black hole that it can consume in place of the suburbs getting cuts in services and funding, but its development led principles have been rather successful nonetheless, and it's going to be merged with Auckland Council Property Limited, which has attracted my wrath many times before, including Manuka land sales. And so what we get is this new CCO, which I've given the working name for now until the new one is confirmed, the Auckland Development CCO, not to be confused with the Auckland Development Committee, which is where the councillors sit. So with this new Auckland Development CCO, it takes the development side of Waterfront Auckland and the property holding side of ACPL. And the idea of that is to turn this, to create a development of the council to spearhead development, urban development in the Auckland region, most likely and specifically on the vast holdings of council land, if ACPL doesn't flog it all off like Manukau prior to the fact. So this new Auckland Development CCO, although Brent Totoran in his last visit talking about Waterfront Auckland says no two public sector development arms are ever the same. The Florida one would be different to ones in Asia and would be very different to each of the five state capitals of Australia, where they also have state planning ministers overseeing them alongside the respective local territorial authority as well. But Totoran did mention, and I have mentioned in my Auckland Development Committee presentation, that our development would be used for not only, well, I use it for primarily to develop transport infrastructure with urban development over the top or around it, and use the revenue gained from new leasing and renting from the developments to help fund our $12 billion transport funding gap without having to go to rates, extra rate rises of 0.9%, 1.2% extra fuel tax. I did note today gas was $1.82 in Southern Auckland today, woohoo. And or the motorway toll, which is up for a referendum decision today by the governing body. That being the governing body will decide whether we get a referendum next year on answering the question of whether we want motorway tolling or not to help plug the funding gap. So the wider question, the questions are going to come up now with this new Auckland Development CCO. Is what form should it take and how should its governance structure be set up, knowing that current CCOs, including Auckland Transport, often attract the ire quite quickly from the citizenry and even the main councillor herself. Well, we know that I would hope, and the reason why I'm doing this is to prompt debate, is that this new Auckland Development CCO would be the kind of development arm that I said in my presentation where it would spearhead, in my case, transport development and subsequent urban development around it to help fund, give an alternative revenue source. That is, the Auckland Development arm would develop the property with the transport infrastructure, this is an example, and the urban development over the top, and then hold on to it rather than flog it off. And so they can get the revenue as an alternative source to fund or build up an investment base for funding other projects later on, while we also get the positive benefits of a quality urban development, whether it's low, medium, or high density, at the same time. So then it comes to the question of how the governance structure be set up. Well, I like the Auckland, despite some misgivings with Auckland Transport, that's down to the people rather than the structure. I would go for the dual senior manager, executive management and board kind of situation, because the board sets the direction and this Auckland Development CCO needs to have actually some semi-autonomy from the main council. Although I'll go into how we get the checks and balances out in a minute. While the board sets the direction, the senior management would execute it. So your board would be a set amount of members, of which at minimum one third of that board would be consisting of Generation Ys or Millennials, those that were born, I think it's 1982 or 3 until just the end of the 20th century. So to bring the youth vibrant in, excuse the language, but nothing worse than having a board stacked with old fogies that are not going to be around much, to be even more blunt, not going to be around much longer, whereas me as a 29-year-old have to inherit it off them and then pass it on to my daughter who was 6 months old a couple of days ago. So a requirement of the board and even senior management level would be that one third would be the millennials sit on it, and we have some very competent millennials, and I'm going to put my hand up here, and I'll be building a portfolio over the time to submit when they do call for leadership positions, money where the mouth is. And with this board, it would be headed by the deputy chair of the Auckland Development Committee, who at the moment is Councillor Chris Darby, because the Auckland Development CCO would have a direct reporting line straight to the Auckland Development Committee. And Chris Darby, in this case, is the deputy chair, Penny Holst is the current chair, would act as a good balance and liaison between the two. And then you also have another councillor that's not serving on an AT board, so that rules out Fletcher and Lee, serving it on as well. So you have two councillors, one of them who would be the deputy chair of the Auckland Development Committee at any given time, as well as one third being millennials, and then the rest could be made up drawing from national and international experience. At executive level, that could be just the standard processes of the CEO and your relative departments as needed. with, although that said, the there would be a stronger lot reporting line to the board than what we have with Auckland Transport at the moment. So we don't have the executive doing one thing, often in contrary to what the board is trying to put through, as we do with Auckland Transport at the moment. Although that said, at the executive level, I would have the board would be looking at the overall regional directive, and of course, with its direct line and taking directions from the Auckland Development Committee, which is somewhat bound to, although it can modify the Auckland plan and the unitary plan if that goes live late 2016. The Auckland Development Committee down at executive level, the CEO and the Chief Operating Officer, so the number two, would be at regional, but the Auckland Development Committee would then be split into quad means four, so but I will stick to it and you'll see one in a minute, quadrants of Auckland to basically execute and implement the development plans that have come through from the Auckland Development Committee. So the quadrants being Southern Auckland, so that's Otahuhu, sorry, FMS, we're going to keep this, keep Otahuhu. So that's Otahuhu from Portage Road all the way down to the boundary with the Waikato. So that includes Otahuhu, former Manukau City Council, former Papakura District, and the former Franklin District. The second quadrant is the IFMIS and arguably all of West Auckland, although this is where number three can come in. If West Auckland needs to be split, it is done at the Waitakere lines. But the reason why I've got West Auckland attached to the IFMIS is that West Auckland is highly dependent on the city centre and the IFMIS for life and the fact of employment, because West Auckland has no industrial base that the South has. So your second quadrant would be the IFMIS, including West Auckland, although you can split west if absolutely required, although I wouldn't recommend it, because the two are actually extremely intrinsically linked, more so than the North Shore, and especially Southern Auckland, which operates pretty much semi-autonomously to the IFMIS than the rest of Auckland, short of the fact that we have to put up with and we have Auckland Council and Town Hall. The final quadrant would be North Shore Rodney, using the Waitemata Harbour and the Harbour Bridge as the boundary mark there. So with these quadrants, so with this executive and managerial level, you would have the CEO and the COO still looking at the regional aspects, but then you would have the head of the Southern Auckland quadrant, the head of the two heads of the IFMIS West Auckland quadrant, and a head of the North Shore Rodney quadrant, and they would look after the execution as well as if there's consultation underway as well of their said areas. That said, if there's ever consultation, that would usually be handled through the Auckland Development Committee at any point in case. And that way through these quadrants, you're not caught out with a super regional structure which the local boards couldn't effectively deal with, and it's dividing it into these, well, I'm going to actually call it four quadrants now. I'm going to split West Auckland off because the two heads that I just appointed it. But although that said, in the end, I think it's just going to be nominal anyway. They can, with these quadrants, they can react and adapt to things more quickly, because what South Auckland needs in its development through the Auckland Development Committee and through the Auckland Development CCO is going to be very different to what the IFMIS and in part West Auckland needs, and to what North Shore and Rodney needs. So that's the reason for the splits there. And of course, you would serve a maximum of 2 4-year terms if you're on the executive level, to which your term ends, and that's it. You have to stand down for another term before you can have a crack again, basically effectively 4 years after the conclusion of your last term. So these are some ideas that I'm floating around with this new Auckland Development CCO idea. I'd like to see what council comes up with, but what do you think it should entail, and what do you think it should do, and how do you think the board and managerial executive managerial structure should be? Leave your thoughts on the blog or on my Twitter feed.